This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, January 2nd, 2018. I'm Caleb Brown. Most American taxpayers got a tax cut, so where are the best avenues for spending reductions and privatization that Congress should be undertaking this year? Chris Edwards, editor of DownsizingGovernment.org, discusses some of the prime cuts in federal spending for 2018. The Republican plan to cut taxes for the broad majority of American taxpayers and many corporations didn't receive a single Democratic vote. And in 2018 now, in thinking about spending cuts that ought to be undertaken, it almost seems like a bridge too far. So where are the areas where you believe there could be a bipartisan agreement on reducing or eliminating a lot of spending?
Well, spending cuts are certainly on the agenda in 2018. Now that tax reform is off the agenda, I think Republicans in Congress will focus on a number of spending reforms. I'll give you a few examples. Farm subsidies. Congress will pass a big farm bill this year. The last big bill was in 2014, and the current bill expires this year. So there will be a big battle over farm subsidies. President Trump, in his budget last year, proposed cuts to farm subsidies, and I think that there's a good chance that we could get some cuts this year. President Trump has also proposed reforms and cuts to the Social Security Disability Insurance Program. This is a $150 billion program that has so much waste and inefficiency in it that you'll even see mainstream media outlets discussing the problem with the program. Essentially, there appear to be millions of Americans who have only marginal disabilities, who should be in the workforce, who want to work. But once you start taking Social Security disability money, you're essentially not allowed to work. So the current system makes no sense. And there is a broad coalition of policymakers who believe we should make reforms, reduce the benefits, and encourage people to get back into the workforce. That would be a win-win for government, reducing government costs as well as increasing the participation rate in the labor force. So there are some areas here that could be bipartisan reform agreements.
So let's take agricultural policy to begin with. There is I guess it's a strategic measure that merges farm subsidies with things that you could argue don't have anything to do with agriculture.
Well, the way Congress usually does farm bills is it pairs them up with food stamp spending, which is about $80 billion a year. Farm subsidies are about $30 billion a year. And so if you join farm subsidies and food stamps together, you make rural and urban interests happy. Republicans in the past have tried to separate out these bills because they tend to favor farm subsidies, but they've proposed cuts in food stamps. We'll see this year. I think an interesting coalition is that environmental groups generally do not like farm subsidies. And of course, pro-market small government groups like Cato and many of the conservative groups as well want to cut farm subsidies as well. The environmental groups have been very effective in the past in making the case that, farm subsidies, they're bad for the environment. They go to high earning businesses that don't need government subsidies. So I think there could be a good coalition there that cut subsidies this year in agriculture.
In fact, I would commend to people look at the Environmental Working Group for lists of specific companies that derive the largest benefits from our federal farm subsidies.
That's right. And we have a chapter in our new book, Downsizing Federal Government Spending on Agriculture Subsidies. That's a real ripe one for reform this year.
All right. So with respect to Medicare and Medicaid, these are entitlement programs. I think they're rightfully thought of as welfare programs. The Affordable Care Act pledged some cuts to Medicare, but is something greater or some reform of those systems to curtail costs on the horizon?
Well, both of Medicare and Medicaid are giant problems. Just to give you some raw numbers that are really eye-popping, Medicare spending is now $700 billion a year, and the official projections show it rising to $1.4 trillion a year by 2027. So, you know, doubling in 10 years. Medicaid is $400 billion a year currently. It's expected to rise to $650 billion 10 years from now. It's absolutely extraordinary. And on, you know, the other big entitlement, of course, is Social Security. It is currently a $1 trillion program, believe it or not, expected to rise to $1.7 trillion 10 years from now. So this is a huge problem. At Cato, we've proposed all kinds of solutions. Generally, with the health care programs, we want to reduce the amount of subsidy and then take the subsidy and provide it to individual consumers to increase competition in health care marketplaces, rather than the current system that pumps out these hundreds of billions of dollars in subsidies to the health care providers. That system makes no sense. It creates inefficiency. We think smaller subsidies directed to individual consumers and opening up competition in the marketplace is the direction to go with healthcare reforms.
Now, economists generally favor cash payments over some sort of large-scale administration of benefits to people as a pure efficiency model. How much efficiency is lost, or how many of those dollars for a lot of these large-scale programs like Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid are essentially lost by the bureaucracy that administers them?
Well, you know, more than the bureaucracy, the problem with Medicare and Medicaid is the massive amount of abuse and fraud. Both of those programs, the official fraud and abuse rates, in other words, the mispayment rates, are over 10%, but other private estimates suggest that the abuse in Medicare and Medicaid is up to 20%. So this is corrupt, doctors overbilling the systems. It's run-of-the-mill hospitals and doctor systems overbilling for procedures either not done or billing for the wrong procedures. It's a huge, complicated mess. There's so much waste and fraud in it that the government, you know, doesn't really have the auditors to deal with it. So the solution, again, is you don't shell out this massive amount of hundreds of billions of dollars to the providers. You send fixed amounts of money to individuals, let them go out into the marketplace and buy their own insurance in a more competitive private market, and that'll tend to drive costs down and tend to drive the abuse and fraud down as well.
Now, the federal government has been described as a health insurance program for old people with an army. And so what can we see from the Pentagon? They'll be audited for the first time ever. Is there any expectation that that will reveal anything that isn't already known about how much waste is within the Pentagon?
Well, for over 20 years now, there's been a requirement that federal agencies should have detailed audits and must have clean financial statements, sort of like the audits of big publicly traded private companies. I believe the Pentagon's the only agency that has never passed these clean audits, and I don't think it's anywhere near. The Pentagon has hundreds of computer and accounting systems. They don't work with each other. They lose massive amounts of inventory. As a lot of our listeners know, the procurement for everything from fighter jets to hammers and screwdrivers at the Pentagon is a total mess. The Pentagon owns all kinds, like the federal government in general, owns a massive amount of properties and structures that it doesn't know it has. It really is a mess. Cato's Chris Preble has talked a lot about how we need another base closing round. There's too many military bases. We need to downsize the number of bases. So all these reforms to the Pentagon can be done and should be done without reducing the effectiveness of our fighting force. So there is a lot of opportunity there. Again, there should be opportunity for bipartisan cooperation to squeeze the waste out of the Pentagon.
One of the things that Donald Trump on the campaign trail talked a lot about was crumbling infrastructure in the United States. And I know you've done some work on what the status of infrastructure is in the United States. Where is the federal spending on infrastructure not needed?
Federal spending on infrastructure is needed virtually nowhere. I think the vast majority of infrastructure is a state and local responsibility and a private responsibility, and I think we ought to get the federal government out of it. The federal government just adds a lot of rules and regulations that raise costs. So, for example, when states build highways, they have to use unionized labor because of federal rules. That raises costs. That makes no sense. Most federal infrastructure spending, Amtrak, for example, can and should be privatized. Britain and Japan privatized the railroad systems. They're both big successes. Air traffic control, to President Trump's credit, he is pushing to privatize that system. I think that may happen in 2018. Both Britain and Canada privatized their air traffic control. Again, a big success. With highways, people talk about, well, we need a federal gas tax increase to do more to fund our crumbling highways. Well, we don't. Any state that wants to spend more on highways can raise their own gas tax. All the 50 states have their own gas taxes. They can raise them anytime they want. We don't need further federal intervention there. And it goes on down the list. There's really no advantage in centralizing the funding and management of infrastructure in Washington. Washington is a mess. The bureaucracies work terrible. Congress is horribly inefficient. I think all these activities ought to be decentralized to state and local governments, and we get more efficient funding for the priorities that states themselves know that they have.
Are there federal rules that could be changed or altered that would just fundamentally shift a lot of the responsibility for that kind of spending to states?
I think the key is cutting federal subsidies. The problem with the federal subsidies for highways, for Amtrak, for air traffic control, for airports, is that the subsidies always come with strings attached, with top-down federal regulations that reduce efficiency. So for airports, for example, many other nations have privatized their airports. Half of all European airports are private now. Canadian airports are run by nonprofit, independent, unsubsidized corporations. Most British airports are private, publicly traded corporations, and again, unsubsidized. So you don't need the federal subsidies. The subsidies just come with complex rules and regulations that raise costs. So American policymakers need to spend more time looking at these reforms around the world. I've written extensively about this on the downsizinggovernment.org website, where I look at these privatization examples around the world. So now that we've got tax reform in Washington, after many years of following the lead of other countries reforming their tax systems, now we need to move to areas like infrastructure, look at these good reforms that other countries have done, and implement the best ideas here in America.
Chris Edwards is Director of Tax Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. And now a thank you to someone who supported the Cato podcast financially at the end of 2017. Dr. Downing, thank you for your patron sponsor gift to the broad mission of the Cato Institute during our podcast sponsor promotion. Without supporters like you, we couldn't do the work we do at the Cato Institute. So thank you.